The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. Rioli, this time, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's a goal! Right on the Tigers! Whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion, just down the arms!
Oh, gee whiz. He's had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big arm takes the mark, and it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
So far, so good in the festival football. Everything else has gone to hell, but football at least is fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is... I am deepening my thesis that this is Richmond's most impressive season ever. Well, by this stage of the season, it is. Well, you know, we'll wait to see it by the end of it.
Maybe not ever.
Oh, sorry, in the Dimmer era. Yes. Just thus far, it's been it's been wonderful.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. So look,
this was a deeply satisfying game.
Yeah, it was. I said this on Twitter, but you know, it feels nice. Like it always felt, and we talked about this when we did the retro podcast of the Wallace era. You know, we were good. We could score well in that era, but you know, we always got sort of discovered as being a bit fraudulent against the really good teams. You know, there were teams that would serially pull our pants down and expose us, and one of them being Geelong. And it feels good that now we're the team that exposes frauds.
Yeah, I did feel a little bit sorry for Brisbane, although, you know, Chris Fagan, he probably needs to come down a bit, because, you know, the champion data or expected score had us still winning comfortably. Not, you know, would have been a lot closer had they taken their chances a bit better, but yeah, we were still a better team.
Yeah, look, we play out this dynamic a lot on this podcast, because whenever we lose, you almost certainly bring up the goal kicking, when it's relevant.
It depends on the Hawthorn game. We won the expected score by 9.
Yeah, that was so random. But yeah, I pointed out, like I often sort of play the devil's advocate. Well, what would we think if we were on the other side? Well, here's what I would say if I was we were Brisbane Lions talk, is that yes, we missed a lot of shots on goal, but yes, we also lost the expected shots. Also, when you miss a shot on goal, it's down your end, it's a point kick out, so you have a chance to get repeat shots. And also, a lot of the missed shots, and this was the case for us at Hawthorn, it was the case for the Brisbane in the last quarter, were in garbage time. So even though the expected score difference was only 9 points, so the game should have been closer, we were playing differently because of our domination earlier in the game. And the missed shots then too, so I'm not saying it wasn't a factor, but it wasn't as big a factor as it got made out to do in the game. And we liked, it's not as big a factor as Brisbane like to pretend, and, you know, frankly, like, we pretend sometimes and we lose a game like that. So, yes, it was a factor, but no, it didn't affect the result, and stop. As a coach, you probably shouldn't talk about it so much. And in none of that did we ever use the old cliche, which I hate, bad kicking is bad football, because, you know, that's sort of, you know, there is a bit of randomness to us. The variation in goal kicking between the best and worst team in the AFL is not that much. It's much less than the actual variance in output.
St Kilda are actually on a historic hot streak with their goal kicking.
They've been historically bad, so which goes to show that it's not all about, sometimes it's just...
Sometimes swings and roundabouts, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, the point that we made in the finals last year, that you kick pretty straight when you're taking quite a few of your shots from the goal square, continues to apply to Brisbane.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, frankly, applies a bit to Tom Lynch as well, because he's not, his goal kicking is a bit of an adventure at the moment. Even goal kicking decisions.
It's not bad, but it's not quite as. It's a little funky. I have in my notes that there's been a fair bit of, you know, Harris Andrews is the next Alex Rance talk, which I feel like is shoehorning the next really athletic, good intercepting key back into a label rather than reflecting who Harris Andrew is. Like, he doesn't win as much ball as Rance does. He's a bit of a different kind of player because he's 5 centimetres taller. But just maybe, Alex Rance's one weakness was occasionally the real gorillas could bully him a bit in the square. And I think Tom Lynch did that to Harris Andrews for parts of Tuesday night.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment, a return to form, and obviously Jack, I think you described Jack's 4 goals as predominantly being about footy smarts.
Opportunistic.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about, Malthouse was sort of saying, made a comment that this is the end, really, that probably his last season, and he's lacking, he used a nice phrase, actually, which he's lacking power in his jumping, which is an interesting way to phrase it, but there is truth to it, because he, you know, Jack used to have this, he's sort of a spring heel Jack, pun actually not intended. But the sort of, I'm not one, look, okay, so get past the obvious take that the decline is evident, if you watch him, but I'm not entirely convinced that he can't play another year after this if he wants to, because he's just so clever, like, and his skills are good enough that, like, you know,
he's really smart, and particularly this lineup of where Chole's spending time and forward as well, and he's a big marking target, and Lynch is an obvious marking target, and they're just, you know, Jack can just sort of slip in there and take his chances. He's still 6th in the AFL in marks inside 50 a game, so he's not, you know, he's still winning some ball, but he's a complimentary player.
Yeah, and like, I wonder whether he's skilled, because he's not your traditional key forward in that he's never been fast, and he's always, like, he once had a great leap, which is gone, but he's always relied partly on his just good all round. Like, he's quite a coward for a guy his height.
He's agile, and he's good when the ball hits the ground and reads it well.
And he's quick. He's quick witted too. Like, he can quickly get out of hand pass. I mean, all time example of that is the tap to Dusty in the Geelong final last year. Oh God, what a good moment!
I was about to say the exact same thing. Like, that is such a footy brain moment.
We should really end the podcast there. Anyway, one last thing about Jack. Sorry to that infuriate, because he had his goal kicking boots on. Through that infuriating short pass that finished in the Miss George shot when he should have just shot for goal himself.
There was some oversharing going on.
Like, that's, and, you know, go back to the goal kicking point. Like, they are, yes, it was infuriating. It was the wrong decision. He's a better percentage shot, but the reason he did it was because they're trying to get closer shots on goal, because they're, you know, after the GWS game, they've made a conscious effort to take their shots closer on, re the early goalkeeping decision, discussion. So, you know, it was probably wrong decision. It was based on sound theory.
Except for Shea Bolton. He can shoot from wherever he likes.
Oh, thank you, Nick. Thank you for getting me off that point. Oh, wasn't it amazing? And, like, he's just, sorry to, I was very, very happy because, you know, Nick, but how far can Bolton kick the ball is my current pet topic. And then he goes and did that. Oof.
It's a long way.
Oof. Oh, he's so, like, he's becoming, like, I think, like, I think he's top five of my favourite Richmond players. I love him. He's so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
Also, and it wasn't even one of his best games.
He and Dusty, as I think Wednesday when I checked, number one and two in the AFL for inside 50s per game. Like, just, yeah, it is fantastic.
And 24 disposals, Nick.
Ooh. Yeah.
And so, very high number for him.
Going really well. 500 metres, like, that combination of metres gained per disposal as well, it's not...
Did you see Dimmer...
Mitchell hand passes?
Dimmer actually talked about metres gained as being a key metric for us in the press conference. Mm. And by the way, we flogged Brisbane in it quite cut by 750 metres, which is sort of, you know, reasonable different distance and in AFL terms. Bolton continues to 500 metres gained and 18 uncontested possessions, which is a sign he's really getting round in the outside of packs and working hard. His pressure acts were fine. Really enjoying his football.
Mm. Two Brownlow votes?
Nick, you can make a case that Baker is too... If we're presuming that Dusty is BOG...
Mm. Yeah.
With his 10-score involvements, and, you know...
And everything else, 600 metres gained and everything else.
The funny was, he wasn't statistically dominant, but by the two ratings measures where Dusty, which normally love Dusty, neither of them were... thought that Dusty was BOG. They didn't even think he was the best player in Richmond.
Look, the AFL player ratings needed to go and lie down because they had Harris Andrews as the best player on the ground.
Yeah, sometimes I think we have to accept that it has some funky results. But you know, even by the champion data, it had it rated Shorten Baker's game better, which is very unusual. But
look, Baker did have a really good game. That was career high metres gained for him. And 580, 26 disposals, 8 intercepts. Yeah, he was really good too. It's like choosing between your children.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, 580, like enormous game, really exciting to see Baker and, you know, looking very up and about. And Shorty was great as well. So, all three of them. So we had four players, if you count Bolton as having plus 500 meter gained.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I must say that, statistics are all a bit funky this year.
Oh, by the way, Nick, sorry to interrupt. Brisbane had none.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, we were transitioning the ball so much better. I loved it. Somebody I read something about Dusty's disposals being down this year. You know, Dusty's disposals were exactly the same when you adjusted for the length of the game. Like, oh
God, was it a professional media person?
Mass.
Oh God,
I think so.
Yeah, it is the advantage of AFL metrics is no one understands what the metric means. So, like, you just get a ranking where people are in the AFL. So it doesn't matter how long some nerd adjusts for the length of the game, and then everything's relative. So it doesn't matter. So, you know, that it makes more intuitive sense.
Sydney Stack, they're also in the access of the willing in midfield. 16 disposals, led the team in pressure acts. 7 score involvements, cracked in pretty hard.
Yeah, I agree. I liked his game. Like, he led the team in score involvements, but it wasn't a particularly high number. But it was a good number, but it was...
Oh, no, Dusty did. Pressure acts.
Pressure acts, yeah, I know. Did I say score involvements? So he did lead the team in pressure acts, but it wasn't a particularly high number. Maybe Jack Graham set our standards on reasonably high. But, just visually, I really liked his game. I thought he was really, like, playing the hard man role in the midfield. It was sort of, Dimmer really complimented him after the game too. So look at
he showed up well in repeat sprint data, which is I know from Conrad Marshall's book. I know is something we track closely.
And so, look, I think he's the him of the transition. Look, let's put it this way. I much prefer him as a midfielder to a badly sinking TikTok video maker. You've probably got no idea what I mean.
I saw them as well. I didn't see them on TikTok because, but follow enough other social media where people shared it.
He's definitely the character.
Don't let your teenagers get tattoos of their boyfriend / girlfriend. being a lesson from it all. Exactly.
We digress.
Jake Arts, also playing well.
Yes. I don't quite know what to make of it. Continues to vastly exceed expectations, and good on him.
Yeah.
We've hardly
had lower expectations. The player, and looked at, like, his draft camp testing, he was a 23-year-old with quite mediocre, particularly his sprints testing from the draft camp. Good on him. And I just keep coming away with, oh my god, reduce list sizes is bad for us. Like, we have the Richmond player development team has just done wonders the last couple of years.
Yeah. And look, again, just to go back to the point about impressive year, let's not forget we are carrying Alex Rance's money on the salary cap. That is a huge, what would you call it? Just a dead weight or a handicap, sorry.
Just over 5% of the cap. So that's, we are in effect below the minimum threshold. Now, look, other teams have injured players who aren't playing as well. But yeah, it's a reasonable handbrake.
So, Nick, you know Kill Bill is one of my favourite films, and as I'm sure it is for you. And you know the story. And there's a story that he tells that the grandmaster tells about this two kung fu grandmasters crossing on a bridge, and the one who's the far better martial artist gives the sort of in a gesture of sort of infinite graciousness or something like that, nods in acknowledgement to the far lesser Shaolong monk, and the Shaolong monk in his arrogance doesn't return, and so the grandmaster kills the entire Shaolong temple and everyone in it. I felt that statement about the sort of the gesture of this far greater person just giving this nod of recognition to this lesser martial artist has been a sort of very gracious thing to do. I felt a bit like that when Dusty gave that hand pass off to Arts to kick that long goal assist hand pass that Arts then was good enough to finish. But I thought Dusty's throwing the hand pass to you in your inside forward 50. It's like it's sort of a sign that you've made it.
When you started telling that story about the Shaolin monk, I did wonder if you were going to talk about how Camden McIntosh left Hugh McCluggage's soul on the outer wing.
It was very. The only person who could have done that better, who would have been more apt to break someone's ankles and then run too far afterwards because he got overexcited, it's really of a George thing to do.
Yeah, true. But it is. Hugh McCluggage is a third pick in the draft. Like, he's a really good athlete and good footballer. So, just Kamek is a really good athlete, and just really has his moments for good and evil.
I was just reflecting. Someone mentioned would Vossi have gone top four in that draft? And it was a pretty good draft. It was a draft that
was a good draft.
Grundy went to pick 19, I think, because people thought he was a bit of a head case. We drafted Vossi in that, but we also drafted K-Mac. So that was actually a pretty good draft, all things considered.
Speaking of defenders. Look, any game where, you know, it was, I didn't love Vossi ending up playing on Charlie Cameron at times, which is, I think, must have been a deliberate thing from Brisbane to try and get that match up. But yeah, it still really didn't hurt us. And look, it was great to have Vossi back. Bolter was good again, almost to the point of taking it for granted. Yeah. Their forward line does not work against us.
No. I mean, and part of that, as you say, is Bolter was the unremarkable solidness of Bolter is you now just expect him to put out those go-go gadget arms and pluck a couple of really nice intercept marks a game. It's become just part of the furniture, really. He had 8 intercepts, Nick, which is pretty impressive, and 6 of those were marks.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah. I didn't love his game. Maybe I'm overreacting to, you know, 1 or 2 instances that cost us goals. But it's great to have him back, and he's sort of been up and down the form this year, but I'm not sure this is his best year, but, we'll see. Hopefully he's okay, because, you know, obviously nursing an injury, that he's okay for, we really need him for Port. We'll see whether Cochin is picked, but Dimmer seemed to indicate that they wouldn't. While we're talking about rotation, very useful, but only 67% gain time. The interesting one, Nick, is, you know, I thought, oh, maybe we'd rest a few stars for the Port game, but we didn't. We put Vossi on in the last 2 minutes of the game, and he played 92% game time. So the only person we really rotated, we really sort of had on a bit lower game time, was Cochin. Sorry, 72% game time.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Because normally, you know, maybe you put Tom Lynch in cotton wool or something. But it was a really fun effort. And it's set us up nicely for, you know, this is very much the meaty part of the schedule, and you know, there's going to be some softer games towards the end of the year. Is, you know, we still haven't played the bottom two teams yet. Feeling pretty good.
Oh, absolutely. Just a few other things we do have to acknowledge, that Salto got his ass kicked by the big O. We won the hit outs to advantage, but the round the ground, it was not good. Big O was a second-rated player on champion data. And Chol sort of did, also, you know, during the game, there was a couple of times where I really liked his physical work. He had 5 disposals. We had 11, Chol and Soldo combined had 11 touches, which is not good. Suboptimal,
yeah.
Nick, if Hipwood was a Richmond player, would he send us mad? What would be our take on him?
Yeah, we'd be super frustrated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how tedious? Because every preseason, there'd be a story that he's put on a few kilos of muscle, and then every year he'd come out just looking slightly bigger, but still too small, skinny.
I know. He was a Queensland Academy pick, but a really highly touted prospect, first round draft pick. Yeah, he's pretty frustrating, and he does not scare me at all. Which is something as a metric.
No, I feel exactly the same way, and I think it's quite sort of indicative of, you know, where he's at as football. Now, Nick, I did just want to bring up one thing that, you know, and maybe I should have mentioned this when we were talking about Brisbane supposedly being robbed. They, to me, obviously were extremely 1-0. It seemed to get a pretty good run with the umpires.
Yeah, there are a few pretty twitchy 50-meter penalties in there as well.
Now, I would just point out, wouldn't put this on social media, but thank you to the couple of people who've pointed this out to us, that Robert O'Gorman, number 10 umpire, has, in the last 4 games against us, has given 48 frees against us and only given us 5. So, I know you're a fan of umpires, but and God knows who's been tracking that, but credit to them for pulling out that stat. But not a great trend.
No, Look, you're always much more of a conspiracy, Andy, than I am.
I don't really think there's conspiracy, but you know, I'm just pointing it out to.
No, there is. Look, the whole thing has been a debacle this season, as has been well covered. But I feel like there's been an instruction on being more proactive about paying kicks in the forward line, which does increase the chances of umpiring, helping to determine a result. And you need to let key forwards be able to go at the ball, but anyway, look, before we talk about Port, just wanted to mention a couple of things. Firstly, on a sad note, the club website had a good article about the passing of Gary Krause, who was sort of a long time behind the scenes person involved with Richmond, including being a board member, and most importantly, just how bad the 1980s were, extending the club a line of credit so we were able to stay financially solvent, which I have to admit, I didn't realise that just before the Alan Bond as president debacle, we had a club president called Bull Durham.
I did not know that. But yeah, look, one of the people who can... And there's more than one, but one of the people who can legitimately say were part of the saviours of the club. Well, actually, you know, I mean, we all donated it to save our skins, but he had the means and the desire to put in far more than that. So good on him, and rest in peace.
And it's always an awkward transition from there, but so we are in the midst of AFLW. Trade season and Operation Get Some Functional Adult Players is in full effect. The banner player we've got, I think we already mentioned Sarah Hosking from Carlton, who's been traded away from her twin. But you know, very, very solid. Sort of, you know, finished 10th in the best and fairest on a good team type player. So not a match winner. But we since traded for three more players. Clearly the most fun of which, is a relative, of Jack Titus, called Sarah Darcy, who has a great video on the club website of her as a, she's working as a teacher in the Northern Territory. And I continue to really enjoy how much AFLW players are normal people with normal jobs compared to the men. She's ex Collingwood and, again, you know, very, very solid, hardworking, regular senior player. Harriet Cordner, who's also, the granddaughter of a Melbourne champion. Again, very workmanlike, dependable key back. And the third, Sarah Dargan from Collingwood, who's more a sort of flighty half forward type. But I think it's putting together a more competitive team next year, which we needed to do.
Yeah, we did lose our fifth in our best and fairest last year, which like it's hard.
Yeah, we lost Grace Campbell. I was really annoyed about that.
Hard though, isn't it? Like I was just thinking, we're operating off really, really small sample sizes. Like these are hardly any games. Let's be honest. But the partly because of the cut short season, obviously, but. You know, you talked about the 10th and best and fairest on a good team. Well, we lost the 5th and the best and fairest on a really bad team. So, she was an important part of the midfield, but it was a really bad midfield. So, I don't know how you rate that. Like, it's just... I don't have a strong feel about, you know, how much of a net loss or upgrade that is. But, you've just got to... One thing is the AFLW, the trade period, partly because they're all on short contracts, but in fact, probably, that's probably a big reason. It's very active. There's an awful lot of sort of, it's sort of like what AFL trade radio wishes AFL was, AFL men's was like. Because there's all these fantasy trades going, like, you know, that sort of three-way trade with all these people going everywhere. It's like, it's exciting for the GMs. But yeah, hard to judge the net result and, till we see them play.
Yeah, and we've traded a couple of second and third round picks, but kept pick one, which I like, because it is one aspect of, I mean, first overall picking them in can often impact early as well, but because women often normally are physically mature a bit younger, that they can. You know, they're very good players at 16, more so than the boys, and that they can step into AFLW and be very good at age 18. So we should get a good player there.
Also, again, maybe this is partly affected by the fact that we were not a very good team, but we don't actually have that much good young talent. We only had one player on the under best AFLW players under 22, and obviously it's a very good player, Conti, but... we need some more good young talent. Anyway, and as you point out, we also need some veteran skills. So that's the thing about being on the bottom of the ladder. It's only one place to go up.
Yeah. Transitioning to playing the team at the top of the ladder, Port Adelaide really good this year.
I think of your two transitions, I think that was probably the least awkward of the two.
It was the least worst.
Yeah.
Port Adelaide really good this year. Their statistical profile is, not quite spotless, but because they're still, normally having a really good percentage and being a really good team go hand in hand, and there's all sorts of history of, you know, the actually finishing with the best percentage is more likely to win a premiership than finishing on top of the ladder if those two things aren't the same thing. So 1980 we had the best percentage, 1982 we finished top but didn't have the best percentage. So, but except for the case, Port Adelaide are this weird situation where they are a really, really good team against three quarters of the competition. For a couple of years now, they just can't beat top teams. And that's still the knock on them this year, because For all genuinely impressive form, they dropped the ball entirely against Brisbane, and the Lions did them by 37 points at the Gabba. So their only win over another contender was against West Coast in the bubble up in Queensland, and it's hard to know what to make of that.
Yeah, and like again, like some stunning wins. Actually, Nick, there was a great article this week. It was normally about Collingwood, but it was about scoring from stoppages. And the article didn't say this, but it had some of the numbers that you could extrapolate that, Richmond is, one of the most conservative, that we neither score nor concede much from stoppages. And Port Adelaide are the opposite in they're very aggressive, that they score a lot, but they actually get scored on. You know, and you could see why there'd be a correlation between those two things, you know, more aggressive hand passes, more aggressive setups. But yeah, so it's an interesting clash there that, and Collingwood have at times given us trouble, with their scoring for stoppages, but fortunately there's no one as amazing as Grundy, on the Port Adelaide team. But Nick, how interesting is, so the Charlie Dixon, Noah Bolter matchup, that's going to be fascinating, right?
Yeah.
Might decide the game.
Charlie Dixon is huge, right? 200 centimetres, 105 kilos, first in the league in contested marking per game. Like, he's having a very good season. He has, what I didn't, you know, the things you miss because, they were just truly terrible, but the 2015 Suns had both Tom Lynch playing well and Charlie Dixon kicking 2.5 goals a game, and nobody noticed. I certainly didn't.
That is extraordinary that they managed to be so bad. And, you know, some reasonably talented guys in the midfield, including our last year's Best and Fairest winner, and still managed couldn't win a game.
Yeah, you know, there was a bit of injuries involved, as there often has been with Charlie Dixon. But, yeah. So, yeah, he's having a really good season. Bokes, sort of after a couple of years of, you know, injuries and maybe age-related declines, at 32 years of age, is the 14th ranked player in AFL ratings on the year. Darcy Brin-Jones is sort of the Port Adelaide Jaden Short, like, gives them a lot of run out of defence. Even their ruckman that they've brought in, Peter Latams, who's not all that great at hitouts, but he wins a ton of the ball. They're a bit like us in...
Lysette's playing really well as well. Default rating.
Yeah, he's been out the last couple of... Yeah, he's been out the last couple
of weeks. Oh, that's right, you're right. He's injured. Yeah.
He may be back. I love... it's a really nice mix of the sort of the older grunt players with Wines and Boak, and the younger guys, Zach Butters, Rosie, Dersma. It doesn't feel like this was meant to be a premiership contender this year, but it has definitely come together. They're a genuinely good team.
Yeah, probably benefiting a bit from everything else that's happened. Nick, we're favourites.
Yeah, in Adelaide.
Off a very short break. Nick, I found it hard getting up for this podcast, and it was after a really good win. really, I did.
Our normal football routine is completely out the window. I don't know how the players are managing. So we've got one fewer day's break. You allow, you know, maybe a goal for home ground advantage.
Still have all these injuries.
Yeah, still have all these injuries. They're on top of the with the ladder, with a much shorter injury list. Bookmakers are feeling us.
Yeah, I'm not. I've been mocked for this by a few friends, but
it's fair to say. Yeah, I mean, we were convinced that we were going to lose by 150 points against the Bulldogs.
True. As well, I was very confident actually against Brisbane. And I hardly ever do it, but actually, I bet on us. I felt we had them.
I was, notwithstanding my normal panic, I was mildly confident about it. I watched the Saints, and the Saints defended them well all over the ground, because they're not. They've got the best defence in the competition for points conceded, but it's a very going forward, they sort of overwhelm teams with amount of football rather than sheer skill at times. I think the way St Kilda beat them they sort of impose their system, which doesn't feel, you know, they did. St Kilda do look a little bit Richmondish at times. I think there is a chance that we can impose our system on them.
I think we sometimes struggle to do it on. This is really superficial because we hardly ever travel, but we struggle to do it when we travel. Now I know we've beaten Port some spectacular victories over there. But if you actually look at those games, they weren't really Richmond System victories. They were often sort of plucky underdog games where Dusty did a few amazing things. Yeah. I know Dusty missed a game last year, but those all, you know, individual efforts, like whether it's Dusty or Tom Lynch, that we managed to
drag us over the line.
Yeah, it was almost sort of night raids where we sort of raided the village in the middle of the night and, you know, carried away the crop before they knew what was happening.
The on-ball battle without Cochin does worry me a little bit.
Huge burden, right? Like, let's not forget, they're so young. Like, if you look at good players under the age of sort of 23, Bolton is like literally the best player right now in the AFL rankings at his age. You know, it's a huge burden. And his second round picking, you're picking Bolton and Stack and these guys it's a huge burden to get up on a short break and, you know, beat really good, consistently beat good teams, which we've just beaten two top eight teams in a row. Like, do it three times in a row. It's a huge ask.
Yeah, I think we can do it. I don't know if we will, but I think, I think the team's feeling pretty good about themselves and their belief in each other. And I think whatever happens, we'll give it a really red hot go.
Now, Nick, there's just two bit of housekeeping issues that I wanted to take care of. Firstly, the boat Calisero is a genius theory is definitely on life support. Hopefully we'll be euthanized after the Dreamtime game. The other one that we shouldn't have let Dan Butler go, that theory is doing very well. Or I guess the counterfactual, it was fine that we let Dan Butler go. Right now he is actually on. I said, let's wait till the end of the year and see if he's all Australian. Damn it.
He's playing really. He's a 24-year-old having a career best season. Like, yeah, maybe moving clubs was what he needed to. And had a injury free run, maybe was what he needed, but he's going really well.
Anyway, we can't, you can't complain too much right now.
No. I was thinking of, when we played the Bulldogs, about how weird it would feel to sort of had that one magical year, and look, they were decent a couple of years before that, but even during the year, nobody really saw that premiership coming, and you know, it would still have been sweet. But there's no sense of at all of a Bulldogs era. Whereas, you know, this is year four of Richmond being really, really fun, and I'm feeling it.
Oh, absolutely, and and, you know, we should wrap this podcast up, but I was really reflecting on, we probably made a terrible decision letting Butler go, but, you know, good teams make bad decisions all the time. All you have to do is get the majority of it. You're going to get more decisions right more often than your opponents.
And when you're really good and AFL standard senior players are not getting a regular game, they go to other clubs and sometimes they make you look bad. Price of doing business at the top end of the ladder, unfortunately.
And also, you know, let's not, you know, much discussed when we're bad, but, you know, we drafted Corey Ellis, we drafted Connor Menayu, we drafted Ben Lennon, famously. And I still think, I know you say every team does this, Nick, but I swear if you did a long-term study of what happens to the first-round pick after your pick, I still reckon that Richmond has the AFL record in most champion players being taken the pick straight after our pick, but you'd really have to do that. You know, someone would actually have to do a PhD mathematical study about that to look at it systemically for all 18 clubs. But a lot of things have gone wrong, and yet we still won two premierships.
We've got three really bad examples in Buddy, Cripps and Fife.
Fiora.
But yeah.
Fiora. And who got taken after Conker? Who was straight after? Was it Heppel was straight after Conker, or was there someone in between?
I have to think about it.
It doesn't matter. But like, I'm saying.
It was Josh Caddy, actually.
Was it? Oh, well, Caddy's not so bad. I mean, Caddy and Conker aren't that different, but there was Tommy Lynch and Heppel as well, and Prestia, but you can't... You don't want to cheat by making it too many picks after. Anyway, it was a decent list. Anyway, but we're getting off the point.
Things are going. List. And it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't matter. Not anymore. And I'm just loving football. I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tactical.
The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. The only this time.
He had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big arm takes the mark, and it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. Four out of five so far this year.
Make it five out of six. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal. How sweet it is, eh? Pickett lines up.
There are alarm bells going off everywhere at the moment. Pickett's having an influence in his first game of footy. Started with him.
Yep.
Dusty's dangerous. The swarming pressure is overwhelming.
Didn't want the body contact. He kept the body free. The pickup's unbelievable. That's a play of the game. That is a play of the game.
We underestimate footy brain and Dustin Martin. You look at his physical ability. At champion data would tell us 7 out of the last 9 finals you can make the case for being best on ground.
We never weep until the final siren's gone. Like the tiger of old, the strong and revolt, for we're from Tiger. Yellow and black, we're from Tigerland.
And I think they were a better team last year than they are now.